What is happening, everyone? Coach Ishak with HockFit Coaching and Legion Athletics, and your host of today's episode of Anabolic Radio. I'm joined today by Father Flex, Alberto Nunez, coach for 3D Muscle Journey. If you guys don't know about him, well, now you know. How are you doing today, Berto?
Good, man. It's hump day, man. So we're almost through that one part. And I try to work Monday through Friday. It never works out that way. So I'm excited. Wednesday is a good thing, man.
Nice, man. Did you train today?
Wednesdays. Did I what?
Did you train today?
No. I'm training late today. So
what are you training?
It's going to be posterior chain dominant lower body. No, it's going to be a pull day. Yeah.
Nice. What's your main horizontal row you like right now?
Hammer strength high row.
Nice. Yeah. Do you use any like particular attachments on it? I know a lot of people like use the D handle grips.
No, it fits me well, but sometimes like that is the cure. Like they got some fake ones at my other gym and that cures it right up. Cause otherwise you're kind of like all T-Rex at the top, at the bottom.
For sure, so, man. Nice.
If it fits you better with that, do that. But I love the high row, man. I can do that all day.
Nice, man. Yeah. And I know you just came off of like your 2-week vacay that you've been doing ever since. What is this little routine you got into recently?
Yeah, so every year I give myself 2 weeks vacation from the gym, right? Like a job, right? And I took a week off, and man, it does me. I mean, deloads are great, but that's like next level. Every other athlete does it. Every other sport does it. But you know, like obviously, the overly neurotic bodybuilder can't always grasp why that would be beneficial. But I found it to be greatly beneficial, and you come back and you're hella excited to hit up the gym again. So, and I definitely was.
For sure. So you not only see benefits from it from a recovery standpoint, but like a mental standpoint?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you train long enough, you get to the point where it's like 4 months go by and you're like, you know what? You can trace back and like, man, that week really did me some good, you know? I've been using them since 2015, and it's been a staple with my athletes who allow for that. Some of them aren't quite ready for that yet, and that's okay. But once you're past a decade of training and you're a bit more on the advanced side, it's probably not a bad idea, you know?
Nice, man, for sure. Do you feel like it's much easier to progress when you get back in the gym?
Because I always start my training blocks like easy. So it's like it feels just about the same. One thing is for sure, it makes you realize how much time you do spend in the gym, which is
for sure
not a bad thing, I guess, but it makes me realize that. Like I always get that epiphany. And then the other thing is you're just excited to get back into your routine, because as much as you love this, every once in a while you get into those funks where you're like, man, I really don't want to go today, you know? So that doesn't happen for a while after you take your week off, that's for sure.
Nice, man. Is it difficult to see you know, a little bit of regression? Or, you know, you just get yourself in the mentality of like, oh, you know, it's all right. You know, I'll get back to where I was or where I was previously at.
I don't think you regress much at all, to be honest. I think if anything, I feel like obviously this is not like it's not really ever been seen in the literature, but I don't think growth happens as in a linear fashion or it's very evenly spread out. Sometimes it just comes in bunches. I think anyone who trains long enough will tell you that it's like, you know, I was just kind of doing my thing. And then all of a sudden, what happened? Whoa, that's new, right? We've all seen that on ourselves. So I definitely, not all the time, but every so often I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I feel like I've given my body a chance to do what it's been meaning to do, you know? So I feel like sometimes from a muscular standpoint, yeah, I feel like, whoa, that's new. That looks a little fuller, you know? Could just be fullness, but nevertheless, I don't think it makes you regress at all. It takes a little bit longer, I think, for muscle to piece out.
One of the things I mentioned to you before we actually starting this episode was how I just love 3D Muscle Journey's 3D MJ's like ability to be so practical in regards to not only the nutrition side of things, but the training side of things too. And what's really important for trainees to focus on in regards to progress. So do you feel like that's something that genuinely like it separates you from everyone else in the space doing what they do?
Yeah, man. I think Jeff had a very good analogy a few years back. It's like, you know, perhaps he's not the person who's engineering the race car, but he's very good at driving it, you know. And that's a different set of skills to actually go in there and get your hands dirty and work with not subjects necessarily, but with people. Mm-hmm. So, there's just, I guess the more experience I gained, because I used to always hear about like, oh, life experience. I'm like, man, this old man just hating on me, man. What's he talking about? You know, like, you know, I've seen some stuff too, and I know some things, but yeah, that's wisdom just comes with time. And, I'm glad it is that way. It's not something that, you know, hey, you can just dedicate 4 hours of reading every day for 2 years and you're wise. No, wisdom is something that you can't rush, and that takes a while. And I think between all of us, we have accumulated our fair share of that. And man, yeah, I think that makes all the difference when you are working with people, and you're working with people often within the confines of a deadline, a contest prep deadline, you know, and people or subjects who are, no one's perfect, you know. But you definitely see that within the practice. It's like, all right, well, this person's situation isn't exactly perfect, but well, how can I get the most out of them? And you need wisdom for that, man.
For sure. You feel like a lot of the things that you've learned over the years, and some of the things that you may still implement with a lot of your clients, are things you've learned through experience.
Yeah. Absolutely. I feel that if you pay attention to what's going on when it comes to the, you know, science realm, and you're busy doing work with people, you tend to be a little bit ahead of the people who are just strictly about the science, and the people who are just strictly about, you know, their experiences and what they've done in the trenches. So you combine both of those things, and I think that's where like the magic really happens, because man, all too often, like, something will come out from, you know, the latest and greatest from the science side of things. And you're like, well, yeah, I've kind of known that, like, that kind of just, very often just confirms what you already know. So.
For sure, man. That's a great point. I feel like a lot of people these days, they're focused on too much of the minutia before they actually start putting together the smaller pieces to the puzzle. Right. And, that actually like puts them in a state of analysis paralysis, right? They're stuck focusing on all these different variables when at the end of the day, like, you have to put in the work, right? It's going to require you to challenge yourself, and you're going to have to potentially do that you're not particularly comfortable with. And I feel like something that also like really separates me from a lot of people doing what they do is like, I've learned a lot of it through experience, and I've floated between extremes. And still to this day, I go back on a lot of those initial feelings or a lot of those initial issues I had, and pull from those to be able to tell my clients during check-ins, hey, you know, I know what you're going through. Big picture of things, it just helps me in terms of helping them navigate their own progress, right?
Yeah. That's one thing that I do get. Like, whenever I do a contest prep, it kind of, like, I feel that the year that I'm contest prepping, I'm almost a better contest prep coach myself, because like everything that they're going through right there, it's like as clear as day. Like just when I think I'm like, you know what, I can get to the point where maybe I don't even have to like compete or anything anymore, I'm like, no, hold up. Now that you're doing this, you see the benefit in like dipping your feet again in that pool. So, experience, man. It's something that you can't replace. The learning doesn't really ever slow down. It seems like gains slow down, like the longer you do this. But when it comes to what you see, man, every single year, like I go back and I'm like, okay, based on like what happened this year with my athletes, I've learned things that I can apply this next year. So that never ceases to amaze me how wrong I am.
For sure, man, 100%. So you use a lot of those experiences when it comes to a lot of coaching practices today. Do you feel like there's anything major that separates how you approach like a contest prep versus a general population clients? Like, let's say, for example, in regards to their mentality or their training or how you set up their nutrition? Mm-hmm.
I think when you initially hear this question, that like the assumption for the listener is going to be that a contest prep person is a little bit more ready and gritty and ready to get after it compared to the general population folk or the person who doesn't have a competitive deadline, when that's not necessarily the case. You know, I think some of my like most hard-nosed people, like do everything people, they do this strictly as a hobby and not to compete. So that is... Just because you're working with, just because you're a competitive athlete doesn't mean that like we don't have, I won't say imperfections, but we're still kind of going through the minor leagues of competing, you know, like trying to hone in some of our fundamentals. So and I just say that because, man, I have some people who don't compete who like literally they're like freaking robots, and I'm like, man, you'd be so perfect for competing, but they're like, it's just not my cup of tea, and then. I think with physique sports now, the level of entry is a little bit different compared to before. I think now it's just way more accessible because people know that it exists. There's way more shows and there's divisions where, hey, you can run in there as a low to medium level intermediate and start competing, you know, namely, I think for women, the bikini division does that. For men, in some cases, the physique division can do that. So, I think the biggest difference, I don't think the goal necessarily matters as much or it changes the way I coach, but more so what kind of person am I like dealing with, you know, what are they ready for? And my thing is always you want to set them up for success, but I think the best way to do that is not to necessarily give them these tasks and these things to check off that are easy, that they're 100% sure going to get done. But I like to push people to the point where it's like, you know what, I'm going to give them a little bit more in some cases than they think they can handle, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like weight in the gym. And I do this because when they get that done, it makes them feel really, really good about themselves. So my job as a coach is to push you to push you and get a little bit more out of you. Like, you know, like don't give them all these things and all these expectations and this checklist is that big and have them fail, but give them a little bit more than maybe they would assign for themselves in terms of responsibilities. That's where I think the real growth and the real progress comes from is like, you know, it's like, some time goes by and you're like, wow, I can't believe I did that. So whether it's contest prep or whether it's general population, I think that's still kind of the name of the game, you know?
For sure. Great points, man. So I guess this next question could be broken off into two, but in regards to like all the athletes that you've personally coached over the years, the athletes you've seen thrive competitively, what separates the people you've seen go there and achieve their best self versus, you know, someone who achieved something a little below their full potential?
Man. I'd say that a lot of the people who exceed what the people who make the most progress are the ones who more than anything are, you know, there's always external motivation is cool. Like getting props from your peers and from other people. That's dope. But I think it's the folks who do this mostly for them, you know, who want to see themselves improve, who, you know, that's what they signed up for, whether someone watches or not, that's why they're here. Those tend to be the people who, excel the most. I like to give this example to athletes. Like it just when it's made sense in a few different scenarios, but I tell them that when it comes to my bodybuilding, it's something that if for some reason Armageddon happened and I happened to be the last person like standing like on planet Earth, I would still go bodybuild. Like I'd go train, you know, 4-6 times a week. I try to get the most out of myself. I push myself. Every few years, I lean down to the point where it's like excessive. And it would all be for me, you know, to see myself continuously grow as a bodybuilder. So that's the mindset I think you need to have if you want to get the most out of the sport. Is, yeah, it, you know, the trophies, you know, the props from the bros, that stuff definitely matters, but you got to be your harshest critic and also your biggest supporter at the same time.
Damn, dropping bombs, man. That was a great point. That was an awesome point. And you'll slowly die with the world being shredded.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, 100%. I was the last person. I'd barricade myself so the animals couldn't get in. I'd have my little farm. I'd go hunting every once in a while. And I'd barricade myself around the gym or something like that, you know?
Mm.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So going a different route right now, I was curious to hear your thoughts in regards to adaptations, because, you know, adaptations are so much more complex than people are led to believe. Most people believe that when they hit a fat loss plateau or training related plateau, it's time to switch up all their variables because they've now adapted. When in actuality, what if the reason the scale stalled was because you were excessively stressed or under recovered, or you were less than accurate with your macros? What if the reason you hit a strength plateau was because you nailed all your other lifts in the day prior or in the session, and now your body's coming into a more specific exercise in a more fatigued state. So although weight lifted may be lower, overall simulation or stimulation may be more or less the same. If that's the case, like, does it still sound like a good idea to change your exercises consistently or slash your macros in half? You know, adaptations can only really be measured by the results you're getting and not getting. And considering every other variable that comes into play in and out of the gym, it's so much more complex. Like, there's so many variables to all of this.
Okay. I think... So just, I'm always impressed when I see someone who isn't necessarily, like, you can tell there's a few things that maybe they're not doing right, but in between sets, like, you see them write down in a logbook. Like, those people tend to be the ones that that progress the most. So I think just that in itself is a big win. If you're, you know, if you're writing down your stuff somewhere, that makes all the difference, because you've kind of committed yourself to, like, not stagnating. You know, you're not going to let yourself see the same numbers and the same sequences, you know, like all the time. But eventually you're going to be like, all right, this is kind of getting old. I've been doing this on the leg curl for, you know, like 6-8 weeks now. Let's try to push it some. So yeah, just a simple act of tracking makes you push a little bit more. I think that's huge. And it also lets you keep yourself from getting too down on yourself, because when you track, sometimes you pick up little trends here and there that you're like, oh, I have been progressing. It doesn't seem like it, but I have been. So it's a friendly reminder of that. So it works both ways. It pushes you to push, but also it keeps you from being too discouraged as well. So let's just say someone doesn't want to, they're not ready to handle the responsibility, and they don't fully trust a system that is a little bit more, I want a little bit more nuance in how things are done. Some people aren't ready for that yet, and that's fine. But if you just simply write down your stuff, that's going to make all the difference. And then eventually you get to the point where, hey, you combine the tracking with some of the stuff that we know works pretty well, which means don't always go balls to the wall. Kind of the same thing as dieting. It's like, for people who have a hard time buying into the whole, like, hey, when it comes to training, like, you need to pace yourself and there's a time to push, and then you pace yourself and there's a time to push. It's kind of like dieting, right? It's like, we could all go on 1,000-calorie deficits and we'd get there faster, but eventually something would break, you know? Same thing with training. It's like, you know, you're doing a lot of jabbing, and then every once in a while you go for, like, the punches. That's what training is to me. And you combine that with a good system with keeping track of your metrics. And once you do that, man, there's no other way of doing it. Like, no other way. No other way. You'll be sold.
Mm. So with the people that you coach, a lot of the athletes you coach, do you ever notice some crazy, let's say, individual differences in regards to fat loss, or in regards to like how much progress someone could make in a particular training block, and they feel like they don't have to even deload at the end of the training block, or?
Mm. Yeah, man, the individual differences are so crazy. And for there's just so much variation within human beings, you know, and you definitely see this when you're in the coaching seat, because you know you have this huge pool of athletes that you're constantly learning from. As much as they're learning from you, you're learning just as much from them. And man, yeah, you see some odd stuff. Like I remember a few years back, this is more strength related. I had this Australian kid, Nathan Tannis. He's still doing his thing in powerlifting. He came to me as like some skinny like teen kid, and eventually like his loads, like I'm just like, man, those loads are kind of freaking crazy. Like are you really lifting that the way we went over, and the way you had just like 3 months ago? And he's like, yeah. And then he sends me video evidence. I'm like, wow, you're smoking this. And this dude's like one of the strongest guys in Australia now. And it's something that like right away he was kind of just destined to do, you know? Mm. So yeah, he was lifting loads that like now, right now to this day are hard for me. And he was like a teenager at the time. Yeah. Right. So you see all sorts of weird things. You see people who are just like very, very slow responders, where it's like, hey, you know, we gain a decent amount of weight, but like not a whole lot of muscle. And then it seems like every time we cut down, it's like we lose the muscle we gained. And like, it's very frustrating. Right. So you see things on both extremes. Most people tend to be kind of be in the middle, but I'd say most people, and most people are wrong about what makes them unique, but most people have one or two things going on within their training, or can benefit from one or two things that just would not apply a whole lot to other folks. Mm. So yeah, the individual thing matters. And with most people, I can usually pick one or two things. I'm like, man, this is just your thing. This is something that we're going to have to do to get the most out of you. But yeah, across everything, fat loss, everything. Like there's some people who have like no breaks for fat loss. I remember one specific case study was that really good bodybuilder, Kevin Riley. Like he came to me with, I think it was like 12 weeks before his show. He had a vacation somewhere in there. And I'm like, bro, I don't know if we can make it. And, but I'm like, but you know what? Like you're so huge and muscular. I'll give this a shot. Whoa. And then before I knew it, it's like we were ready early, like 4 weeks early.
Yeah. So, what?
Yeah. That's
crazy.
Yeah. So he's when it comes to fat loss and retaining muscle, like that dude just has it. So it's like, you start, I wouldn't say I start people with like a very generic way of doing things, but I do start people with almost like washout periods when they come to me, because most folks, it's hard. It's not to give them grief, but there's a conflict of interest when it's like when you're coaching yourself, when you're doing things for yourself. Like it's hard to not get emotionally attached. I mean, that's why, you know, doctors won't operate on their own kids. You know, therapists won't bring their wife in and like, all right, I'm gonna be the therapist for our marriage here, right? So same thing when you're, you know, working with your own situation. It's hard to, you know, pull apart. It's hard to be objective with yourself. So my job when they come to me is like, I'll start them with something like decently generic, something that like, it's like, okay, this just makes fundamental sense. And we start from there, and I can usually get about 80% of it right. And it's that last 20% that probably relies a little bit more on individual differences, whether it's physiological or whether it's psychological. You pinpoint those things and you go for that main vein. And that's when that person really, really starts to thrive.
Losing objectivity and, let's say, getting emotional about your progress is super common, like in a contest prep, right? I know for me, for example, when I was like 8 weeks out from Muscle Mayhem, I like Chris Bearcat, for those of you guys listening, Chris Bearcat was my second set of eyes during my contest prep. And, you know, whenever I had like some adjustments I wanted to make or whatever the case may be, he would be the person I would always go to and tell him what I intended to do. At 8 weeks out, I lost all my objectivity, man. Like, my brain, you just get in that super dieted state and your brain starts playing these tricks on you. For you, for example, do you find, like, when you're in the trenches in contest prep, do you find there's a huge loss of objectivity? And do you have, like, a second set of people you always go to?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. But this also, man, this goes into like another, another small mini tangent, in that I think sometimes with certain athletes, I also let them have their way to an extent, within reason, you know? I think especially when you, as crazy as it sounds, like, but when you get someone who's like super, super talented, I definitely count on their feedback and I trust their feedback. And I think the reason for that is because I think if you're these athletes, like certain athletes, this is going to sound a little bit bizarre to most folks, but it's like their feedback that they get from their bodies is so accelerated and so clear that, you know, you and just kind
making
of
making adjustments so easy.
Well, it's like they can just trust their bodies. Like if I'm training a power lifter and they tell me that somewhere around four to 6 weeks out from their meet, they tell me something along the lines like, you know what, I feel like we pushed too hard there and we're going to have a hard time recovering later in the block. Like that sounds bizarre to a lot of people, but partially, yeah, it's probably experience-based, but also it's like their bodies are talking to them all the time. Like, for example, with me and glycogen storage, I am so predictable. I don't look at myself when I'm going through a peak week. I don't. I just kind of go by feel. And based off how my body feels, I can get myself there. So I'll keep myself covered up the whole time. I'll just eat based off like how my pumps are going in the gym, how good I feel when I'm flexing. And I can tell what's going on underneath the clothes. Whereas if I look at myself in the mirror in a week, I can convince myself of like three or four different things. I think this heavily talented athletes, sometimes I rely on them to tell me like what is going on, because again, their systems are just so hardwired to do this that it's like, yeah, what do you think? So it's I mean, same thing with like Jeff, like when he's doing this thing, like every once in a while, like, yeah, we do help him out with like, you know, he sends us some things like, am I crazy? Am I not? But for the most part, like he's done this long enough. He's mega talented. So it's gotten to the point where it's like his body's talking to him almost, but that takes a few years to get there. And for some athletes, they just develop that quickly because again, their body is so responsive to things. Like they can tell you whether or not something is working, whether or not something feels right.
Like a full body proprioception.
Exactly. Yeah.
What do
you
think separates someone from like being able to get to that level of awareness versus someone who doesn't? You think it's just like experience or going through the motions or?
Yeah. So a lot of it is definitely experience. So my last contest rep, for example, I didn't really track. I just kind of knew, you know, from 175 to 170, this is what it should feel like. From 170 to 165, this is what it should feel like, and so on and so on. Because I've ran that track before, right? So I kind of know what to expect, right? And it should only be this hard, or it should be this difficult at this point. So yeah, doing it a few times, doing it for a while helps immensely. And that's when I do feel that it's in your best benefit as an athlete to be able to have a relationship with your coach where you can relay things to them and they're taken seriously, because again, you've done this before. That's one is experience. But then, again, the other one is just, you know, like someone like that kid Nathan, like the powerlifting kid, like with him, it's like his body just was so well grooved to like strength training that, like, you know, he could tell me things, you know, and I could really, really trust him, like almost right off the bat, even when he was younger. So it's a combination of both. But I do think the first few go arounds, I do think it's important to kind of almost just be a slave to your coach. My first contest prep that actually worked, this was in 2008. I had Lane Norton as my coach, and literally whatever he said to do, I just did it, you know, because I was too new to give input. And I think at that point in time, that was probably the best thing to do for me.
Nice, man. Nice. I definitely think like learning through experience is such, it's so fundamental. And like, also like you get all these people giving particular guidelines, right? And it's good to like read them and listen to them, but you can't like take what they're saying as fact. Like at some point you have to go through some trial and error to figure out what works best for you. And this could even go for training wise, like figuring out what exercises are a right fit for you that provide you the most stimulus. I definitely think learning through experience is something that goes over most people's head, right? Now, when it comes to achieving true contest prep conditioning, do you ever find yourself comparing between preps?
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. And only that, I think you can always, at the end of a prep, you know, you go back and you look at what was done, and you can always find where I made some wrong turns here and here. Right. And, you know, you apply that to the next one, and that should make the next prep a little bit better. But hey, knowledge gets lost sometimes. And sometimes, you know, you finish off a prep and you're like, oh shoot, but this is something that I did better like two preps ago, and I completely forgot about that one. So like every prep I've had, in some way, the totality of it has been better, but still, like there is, and this goes back to bookkeeping, there's still a few things I'm like, man, you know what, that year I did this and that just a wee bit better than this go around. So every prep, for sure, like you should have a list of where you went wrong, like where I lost my crap, and maybe that made me make the wrong calls. But I feel most people, generally speaking, hardly ever really take a step back when it comes to a contest prep, you know, especially nowadays where we recommend that people spend a good amount of time in between preps. It gives the athlete a chance to mature, to learn some more stuff. And by the time they jump into their next prep, they're usually a whole lot better. But yeah, man, like that is always the number one goal, is like beat myself, be my former version of myself. But nevertheless, every once in a while, like I could go to every prep and there's one or two things that I'm like, man, I did that way better in 2007. I did that way better in 2008. So yeah, no prep is perfect, but we all play like kind of like a golfer that wants that perfect round of golf. Like at some point we're going to nail that perfect prep, you know. Yeah. It's not going to happen, but it keeps us pursuing.
Are there any key takeaways in regards to mistakes you've made previous preps that maybe like you could tell some of the listeners they could maybe learn through your experiences?
Yeah. Let's see. I think the length of a prep, there's such thing as too long, and then there's such thing as too short as well. I don't think I've done too short. I was too short because I started overweight. But so I guess it was too short for that test, for that particular prep, where I had way too much weight to lose. And then so for a lot of people, like, it's funny, like when it comes to the too short thing, most athletes, when they're about a week out, if you were to ask them, hey, what if we kick the show back like 4 or 5 weeks, would you be okay with that? And they'd be like, yeah, please, let's move the show like 4 or 5 weeks. Like, of course, again, like, the promoter's not going to go do that for you. But nevertheless, it kind of goes to show you that, you know, like, for most people, a little bit of extra time probably is not a bad idea. Because to be honest, I'd say with like 95% of competitors, like, the issue is like, you could have gone leaner. And then on the too long is that, just like any other sports feat, like, you can only run around peaked for so long before your body kind of starts to just crumble. So yeah, I do think for most people, I'd say anything over 6 months, usually, if you're starting at a relatively reasonable body weight, right, is probably too long. And at the end, you might find yourself like fighting to keep yourself together, both mentally and physically. So I think that's the number one mistake. The first time, I didn't give myself enough time for all the weight that I had to lose. And then there was a prep in 2011 where I started in January and it ended in November, basically. So that was, I remember somewhere around like September, I'm like, this is starting to become quite the task. Pick the length of your prep to be reasonable, for sure. And I think for most people, that's going to be somewhere between 20 to 30 weeks. That's about how much time you need.
Just to build off what Berto was saying, guys, I think it's super important you plan out an appropriate rate of loss. But along with that too, like, it's good to have a set deadline or a specific amount of time that you're prepping a fat loss phase for. But you also have to understand the other side of the coin is, like, you have to account for the individual differences. Like, some weeks you're possibly going to average a loss, some weeks you won't average a loss. And you have to account for the weeks where you don't make much progress at all, right? And
yeah.
Great points, man, for sure. To build off what you were saying, again, it's funny that you mentioned this because, you know, I feel like once I in my past, my 2019 season, when I peaked for Mayhem, which was in July, and then I had the Max Hype Supernatural, which took place 4 weeks after, right? 4 weeks after the Supernatural, I was still prepping for another show, which was in October. Oh man, it was no longer fun. It wasn't fun. Every day it was a fucking grind. Like I feel like I had already achieved my best self. So like continuing to diet down just to see like some more detail in my legs, it was excruciating. And it's funny that you mention it, how it could be such like a mental battle as well as like an actual battle against your physiology trying to get that lean, right? Great points, man. Now, have you ever found anything super freaky about yourself that happens when you get super lean, or maybe something with your clients? So for example, I know I mentioned this to you before the podcast, but you know, when I got super lean, I noticed like my vision started to get a little worse. Obviously that could be due to like just time running its course, right? Mm-hmm. But it's something interesting that it occurred at the same time, or just so happened to occur when I was prepping. But like when you're dieting down to super lean levels, like super low body fat percentage, a single digit past 8%, like you're not only targeting body fat viscerally, but you're also targeting body fat around your organs and everywhere else in your body. So do you notice anything freaky about yourself when you get super lean, or your clients?
Let's see, I think with my clients, you know, you do this long enough and you go hard long enough. I think a big one is a lot of like maybe old injuries that they've had. they become more prone to popping up again. So if someone's had an issue with a left shoulder, they'll find themselves like, it's like it's starting to bother me again, you know? So that's a big one. Is it, the cushion disappears. In a way, you could, and just like, I guess, an injury in a way is kind of a negative adaptation. It's like you kind of push that tissue, and the tissue's running like too far, and it just becomes a little bit easier to do that. So, yeah, the staying healthy, like physically, like is a huge one, and I think something where once people get to the point where they're about maybe 5% away from like from their stage weight, not 5% body fat, but 5% of they need to lose 5% of their current body weight, that is about when the time that for most people, like, hey, let's start making some little adjustments here and there, like, hey, maybe let's get off that low bar squat, let's find a good leg press or something like that. For me personally, when I diet, my allergies, man, they get as I get really close to contest weight, they start to become an issue. So I am taking like about one Benadryl a day so that I can breathe. And then also, yeah, this has been a theme for like the last three preps, but I get rashes, these weird rashes. Same thing. I'm pretty sure it's an allergy, because as soon as I take an antihistamine, they disappear like that. But yeah, so my immune system definitely takes a little bit of a hit. So just kind of goes to show you that, yeah, the whole contest prep thing, like you might look like freaking He-Man out there, but realistically, human beings were not necessarily meant to be running around looking like that. You know, like I think in the real world, like superheroes would be like 15% body fat. You know, like Superman would have an ab cage and not like 8-pack abs and separated quads, right? So, yeah, there's so much small print to getting lean, and it's something that I do think a competitor should hear about before they, because it looks good on the gram, but to like actually be living it, it's fun. Don't get me wrong, but it's like any other sporting endeavor, right? It's like you open up the season, and you're like, oh yeah, you know, NBA players like game one of the regular season, and then it's like game 75, and you're like, yeah, you know, I'm still excited, but it wears on you, so. So yeah, be aware of all the risks that come with being lean. You're not going to experience every side effect, but you will definitely get a few. No one's an exception to that.
Great points, man. Awesome points. Now, I find like over the years, really being able to stop and, well, I've only competed twice, but both those seasons, this is something I really learned, is like being able to stop and smell the roses as you're dieting down, or as you're trying to, or when you're trying to achieve X goal, you know, stop and smelling the roses, seeing how far you've come, really appreciating the experience for what it is and taking it all in, is so fundamental, because I feel like so many people forget to do that, so much so to the point to where when the competition season is over, all they're thinking about is competing again. Maybe this like causes them to cut their off season short, for example, or, you know, they experience that sort of post-show blues the first couple weeks after a competition season. Do you have any clients that have experienced that, or have you personally ever gone through something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we always tend to romance the past a little bit more than hype it up to be a little bit more than it was. Right. Like, and this goes for everything. Like, this goes back to like, you know, oh, high school years are great. It's like, you really stop and think back, like, no, actually they weren't all that fantastic, you know? So, but it definitely hints at something that most of us are a little bit guilty of, that old cliche of not living in the moment enough, you know? So whether it's high school, which, you know, while you're in it, you're like, I can't wait to graduate to just like move on with my life, or whether it's like 20 weeks into a prep, or whether it's like 14 months into an off season, it's like whatever you're doing, it's like enjoy it and appreciate the fact that at some point you will look back at this moment and find a lot more good things than maybe than you're able to realize right now. Right. So that helps immensely, and it keeps me from, you know, yeah, when I'm prepping, being thinking too far ahead into my next offseason, or when I am, you know, 190 pounds and like 30 pounds over contest weight, like thinking about like, man, can't wait to be shredded again, right? So there's something lovely in every moment, and we're so caught up in getting there that we just sometimes don't peep out the scenery, man. That's so important. And not only is it important because it's a good feel, but also it's important because it keeps you from being too ADD about stuff. And you're like, all right, let's really focus on this, because this is what's going on right now, and I'm gonna get everything I can from this moment, from this point in time. So it's really, really, really important, regardless of where you're at, because grass is always greener, as they say, right?
For sure. Grass is always greener where you water it. Hey,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, yes. did you have any experience with maybe clients who experienced some serious issues like post show, and you may have to like refer them to, let's say, like a mental health specialist or someone who like actively deals with like eating disorders, right? Because, you know, contest prep isn't particularly healthy, like doing it for an extended period of time. So, you know, helping people get back to that next step of recovery is so fundamental in becoming like a normal person again.
Yeah. No, I think it's becoming less and less of an issue. Mm. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm getting less out of my athletes. It's I think it's the best programs, whether it's like a nutritional program or a training program, not to say that they're easy, but they almost feel like a hack. You know, it's like the first time, for example, I think anyone who has done more of a traditional bro approach to eating, and then they switch over to something that's a little bit more pliable, that's based off calories and the macronutrients. Like the first 6 weeks of that fat loss phase, you're like, oh my God, like this has been amazing. Like, I don't feel like I almost deserve this fat loss. Right. And I think any sort of good training program, any sort of good nutritional program, like gets you there with the least amount of dents. So that's something that I'm constantly always searching for, is like, okay, like you can get someone shredded. Like there's really almost no limit to like human fat loss. Like, I mean, otherwise people wouldn't die from starvation, right? But it's like, how can I get you there like in one piece? We won't get there in one piece, but the healthier an athlete is, the further they can push. And I think sometimes when you do list that as one of your priorities, people think of it as like, oh, you're sandbagging me. It's like, no. It's like, think of it as a mental injury, as like a knee. It's like, if we mess up your knee, how are we going to get the most out of like a squat, right? Mm. So I think it's happened far less, but nevertheless, I still get people who, once they're done with their prep, it's like, okay, we need to see how these first 4 to 6 weeks go. And if we don't see a lot of these symptoms change, we're definitely going to have to outsource you to someone who specializes in this. But what I have noticed is that once we decided to formally attach a recovery protocol post prep, a lot of people in those first 4 to 6 weeks, like, they will regenerate a lot of what is missing, like, from them, a lot of their original self. And it's just, man, as much as I do this in already way too much, but that was the main issue with the recovery diet, is like, people of the reverse dieting way of doing things is that folks would be like 4 to 5 months post show, they're happy in a way because they're 7 pounds over stage weight, but there still is like, their mind is just in a very inappropriate place. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, and with a more recovery based approach post show, you find that, you know, they might be fighting you a little bit, like as their weight is climbing up, but then 12, 13 pounds later, 3 weeks later, they're like, you know what? I'm good. I haven't been shredded most of my life. Now that I'm no longer shredded, I really don't care as much as I thought I cared. And I'm starting to appreciate and start bringing in these other parts of me that we kind of have maybe not as much of a place in the contest prep. I'm bringing those back in, and it's great. I'm having, you know, having dinner with my friends on Friday, me and the significant other, we get to go on a date, you know. The refrigerator isn't always calling my name. I am not looking at everything at a grocery store. It's important. Yeah. Keep an athlete as healthy as you can as you're prepping them or peaking them for strength, because you'll be able to get way more out of them. But then also once you've achieved that peak, it's like, you can't live at the peak. And that's something that we have to accept. No other sport does that. No other sport does that. Like, their peaking blocks are like that, you know? And especially for bodybuilding, I think, because it's not just the hard training, it's also all the stuff that happens outside of the gym, right? It impacts everything. It's especially more important that we take some time to regenerate.
1,000%, 1,000%. Great points, man. So I never mentioned this to you, but so my first prep, I actually took a reverse dieting approach, like incremental increases of calories. And if you've been following me for a while, you know how that turned out. I actually ended up, you know, binging, and that went into a deeper rabbit hole I had to recover from. But the difference compared to this prep was, this prep, I actually took a recovery approach. I took the recovery diet approach. And personally, I did experience, you know, some of that post-show blues, like missing the peak conditioning and like seeing yourself regress a little. I'm not going to say like that doesn't like affect anyone. Like, that sucked. It sucked. And like, you know, you're weak as shit and, you know, you're just trying to get back into a spot with your training where you thrive. But, you know, to anyone who's listening to this, who may be dealing with those types of symptoms or they're in this post-show blues period, I'll tell you, it feels better once you're a couple weeks deep into it and you start getting stronger and you start enjoying a little bit more food. Sure, you're getting fatter, you're maybe a little fluffier, you may be adding some body fat on, but it's necessary in order to get you to recover properly and function properly and feel like a normal human being again, which is so important.
Yeah. Shoot, the first time I got shredded, I remember I was so attached to it as well, in a way. And one of my friends and mentors coming up, Jeff Rodriguez, phenomenal bodybuilder. I remember someone had asked him about, like, are you going to miss it, your shredded glutes? And he was like, no, I only need them for comp day. And I'm like, oh, shoot. Like, he was so nonchalant about it. But that definitely hit me, and it made me really look at this like a sport. It's like, you know, if you're running track, you don't want to run your best times early in the season. You want to run them right time and then get away from it, because otherwise you're going to break. And I think the reverse diet, in some ways has taken, I think that's why more, it's made the sport, a no-go for a lot of people. I know we've just going back to like when it was really popular to like now, I look at, there's a lot of names and situations that come by, not necessarily my athletes, all of them, but where that part like literally drain them to the point where they're like, you know what, this is just not for me. Because if I'm going to have to, you know, diet for 4, 5, 6 months, and then there's like a 4, 5, 6 month period of like having to get better, it's like I'm giving away a year of my life in some ways. It will become easier, I think, as you do more preps and you get shredded, like to get out of there, because you're like, I've been there all the time. I visit this place all the time. It's like I'll be back, you know. After my last show, I think 3 weeks later, I was right at the shape that I started my prep at. And I was like, oh, great. This is like, I saw it as a relief. I'm like, okay, now I can finally get to training. Like, that's what I want to do more than anything else. And everything else, I want to go on a hike and feel amazing, all those things. So yeah, it's easier once you've been there a few times. But I don't blame anyone for being attached to their hard work, because you work so hard. And then to have to undo that and see yourself like literally at some point get fatter from one day to the next, that can be bothersome, you know. But But again, most of us, you know, we went our whole, most of our lives without being shredded. You'll be okay.
Facts. And just important to know, guys, like a lot of us plan for getting super absolutely shredded, but it's so fundamental to have a game plan for recovery, whether you be a reverse diet, whether it be a recovery, I don't really care. Just as long as you have something there that you could go to post show that's going to help you thrive. Once again, that's super important. It's fundamental. Please plan out your post show recovery. Please plan out your recovery from your diet, even if you're not competing, if you're getting super lean. Listen to this. And you know, the reality is, sure, competing is awesome. I really love what you said, how I only care about how I look once show day comes around. I love another quote by you where it says, you know, the body composition that you look the best might particularly be the best one you perform the best at, or something like that. I might have paraphrased it, but
Where you perform your best is probably not going to be your best look, you know, but that's where your best look is born from, you know, is the work you did in the teens, like when it comes to body fat percentage, if you're male in particular, obviously a little higher for females. But yeah, that is your get dirty outfit, you know, and your contest prep is your, after all the work is done, that's your going out Friday night outfit. Yeah.
Facts. Do you ever find, and I guess this could be like super individual, do you ever find anyone who's scared to possibly like push their body weight up?
Oh yeah. I think that's so common, especially with people who've been in show shape. And obviously one thing you can always like go back when it comes to these individuals is the fact that, you know, like for, you know how to get shredded. We've been there before. Like we can do that again, you know? Cause the truth is like January right now, right? Like, so the gym is flooded with all these folks who are trying to start out and, you know, make this a habit and get theirs. A very common goal is the fat loss. The issue with a lot of these folks is they don't know, like they really don't know why they got fat necessarily. They don't. They don't know how to correct it. They don't know how to lose fat. Whereas like most people who do this, it's like, hey, everything that you're going through, like you are in control of, like we know how to get lean. We know how to create a caloric deficit. And if you remind them of that, they're like, oh yeah, that's right. That's right. It's not, we're not like over here lost wondering if we can regain that again, you know. It's and the real discipline is like once you know how to induce fat loss is like not pressing that button every time you feel a little uncomfortable.
Facts. You gotta love every stage, and competing is just a small piece to the big picture. Particularly what I love about you is one of these pictures you posted on your Instagram, maybe I'll put it up right here for those watching, but where you mapped out how many times you actually got super shredded compared to how many times like you spent investing.
You know, I think a big thing was like the culture was so different back then. So I'm not going to say that it was just like my own bright idea that, you know what, I am going to be the person that just starts investing early. No, I think it used to be, well, I think first of all, what aided this is there was really no place for natural bodybuilding. So if you were 5'9", 170 pounds and you posted pictures, everyone, you'd get one comment and that's just bulk. And there'd be a whole like train of just people saying bulk. So the culture was very different. It was like people, like the mass monster thing was at its peak. There was no classic. There was no men's physique. There was no like looking just aesthetic, like Gymshark should fucking sign you right now. None of that was in style back then. So, so yeah, I think it probably pushed me too far in some cases, but I think it was better than I think what a lot of folks do, like in their 20s, where they spend way too much time going through fat loss phases. And it made me, I think, just a little bit more comfortable with like all the seasons, you know. There were so many summers where like all my homies were getting ready, you know, and they're like, you know, we're going to be at the reservoir on our boats. It's like, you joining? I'm like, yeah, but you know what? I'm going to be in the high teens when it comes to body fat. So, yeah, it's very hard now, man. If you scroll through your Instagram, you're going to see all these shredsters, man. And you're going to want to join in that party, but,
I'm mistaken of this too, to be honest. Like, ever since competition season, I haven't really posted any current off-season photos. Given I'm 14 weeks, but like I posted videos training and stuff. But I guess it's just coming to terms and being more comfortable with a higher body fat percentage and really understanding that, like, even though that might have been your best where you were the most shredded, it doesn't necessarily, you know, dictate how much further you could go, how much more you could accomplish. And it doesn't define your worth, right? Being shredded doesn't define, like, you could be shredded and you could be a shitty human being at the end of the day. And to me, that matters more than someone who's a little bit heavier and they're a great person. They have a good heart. They have right intentions, right? But for sure, man, great points. Do you have any, let's say, valuable gems in regards to recovery after the competition season, really thriving when it comes to your training?
Mm. Yeah, yeah, and it might not be direct. Like, it might not be like something you focus. It's not bodybuilding specific. Mm. So I think this was probably the main thing that made me fall in love with bodybuilding, and that's, I think prior to that, I wasn't very goal oriented as a person. Sure. And then eventually, you know, it just starts with old things. Like, I want to press those dumbbells, you know, I want to do the whole stack on whatever machine, and you see it happen and you're like, oh wow. Like this, like, going for things and committing to what it is that you want to go for, this stuff really works. And I always think it's a shame when, people use that gear only when it comes to bodybuilding, because, man, there's a lot of very successful people that look at what fit people do, respect what fit people do, but they can't do it themselves. But when it comes to their own world, whatever it might be, they're highly successful and they get it done. So what that tells me is that if you're able to do this bodybuilding thing, you're able to commit to the gym, commit to eating in a way that is conducive to your goals, commit to these like long stretches of gaining, commit to these long stretches of fat loss, that you have this skill, you have this gear. And this is something that a whole lot of people, honestly, they go their whole life without really ever learning how to make it happen. And you pick one of the harder things out there, this like recomping and the strength training thing. It's a hard hobby, man. It's great as great as it is, it's really hard, and people underestimate how hard it is. But a lot of these people who, like, you know, they're all about it and they get their stuff done, again, they only leave it there. So what I would suggest to these folks is, like, hey, that same skill set, that same mentality that you take to your bodybuilding, apply that. If you're in school, apply that to in school. Like, be that one student that, like, you know, your professors just don't ever really forget about, because you have that gear, and you if you apply it to just about anything else, you will be rewarded in some way. So I'd say post show, especially after you're coming off, you know how it is, like, you wake up and prep, and like you wake up like a robot, you're like, time to go get some, right? Like it's like urgency, the air smells so crisp and you're ready, right? Find something else, because the recovery aspect take care of itself, the off season thing will kind of take care of itself. Find something else that you can inject this mojo into. And I think is you're maybe going through some uncomfortable phases as you're regaining weight, as you're you've regained some weight, you're like, man, I'm still kind of weak. This is kind of disappointing, because you know you took some hits during the prep. That'll keep you distracted, and that'll keep you going, and that'll give you something else that you can generate some self-esteem, some self-worth from. So yeah, usually after a prep, that's what I like to do. It's like, I'm like, all right, let's find a few other things that we really, really want to dive into and be really, really good at that. Take this like shark in blood infested water mentality too. So it's crazy what we do. We don't realize how hard it is what we do. But when you stop and you think about it, you're like, yeah, I'm willing to feel like shit for like a few months, you know. I'm willing, like, in the off season to like train and progress and
shovel down,
grind it out. Yeah. So you apply that anywhere else, man, you're gonna stand out.
Facts. Great points, man. And, you know, it's funny that you mention it because one of the best natural bodybuilders to bless the game, if you all don't know who Brian Whitaker is, you know, he says it openly that bodybuilding isn't his main thing versus being a professor and a husband and a father. And then bodybuilding comes after all that stuff. And I feel like, you know, a lot of us, sure, it's great to be super, let's say, neurotic about your nutrition and training, right? And for people like us, that gives us joy, right? That's cool. But it's super important to space your life out with other things that make it enjoyable. You know, bodybuilding, at the end of the day, it's supposed to be something that enhances your quality of life. It doesn't, you know, control it and make you feel like shit every day or make it feel like a chore. It should be something you enjoy, right? And if you're trying to fit into this specific image, maybe, you know, you need to look at yourself in the mirror and you really need to determine what's, you know, important for you, what you really value. And just an important note to add on to our off-season discussion. Guys, building muscle is so much harder than shedding body fat or getting shredded, right? Getting shredded is so easy compared to trying to add on, let's say, 10 pounds of lean body mass on your frame. And it could be like, you could argue that it's like individual, right? But building muscle tissue takes time. It takes time and it's something you have to be patient with. And you're not going to achieve that goal if you're constantly spacing it out with these fat loss phases and mini cuts. This is why gaining for an extended period of time is so beneficial, especially if you're a natural athlete. The reality is you need to take time away from the stage, especially like if you're taking it to that level of shredded. You need to give yourself time psychologically and physiologically to recover, because, you know, we could get into all the science stuff about it, but like your hormones are going to take a hit, your psychology is going to take a hit, you're going to be more into yourself and so on and so forth. So just important things to note. And
yeah, man, in 6 months you can get anyone really lean, right? Like if, as long as they're reasonably at a reasonable body fat. But in 6 months, man, you're not going to build you're not going to build all the muscle you're ever going to build, you know, like even if you're a noob.
Facts. Do you have any important notes in regards to tracking progress in the off season, whether that be like with your lifts or body composition wise? Also, in the off season, what really helped me transition out of that post show recovery and just focus on my performance was not looking at myself in the mirror. Mind blowing, right? Just not looking at myself in the mirror. That helped me recover so much more. So just a side note there. But yeah, in regards to tracking progress in the off season, how do you go about doing that?
You know what? I think that's a good idea too, when you're gaining, like to kind of just go on stealth mode. And like keep yourself covered. I think I might be due for one of those. I think that'd be good. Just because, and I used to do this way back in the day. When I was a teen, I would basically, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna be covered up for 3 months. There's no working on a tank top for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then I would bring the tank top, specifically on a day where, you know, you're going to get a good pump. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I would see myself in the mirror and I'd be able to see changes, but then also it would make me reappreciate what I do have because I hadn't seen it in so long, you know? So yeah, I think there's something to not watching, you know, paint dry, like you know,
sure.
And it's the inverse of that. Sometimes when you're dieting, you know how it is. It's like, you feel like crap. You're like, I have to walk these dumbbells over to the bench to press them. Like the set doesn't start when you lay down. It starts like when you're taking them off the rack. Right. But I'll look at myself in the mirror as I'm holding the dumbbells and I'm like, damn, look at that. And sometimes that'll hype you up. So it's kind of the inverse when you're like gaining. It's like sometimes in that situation, I think it's better to not look at yourself. Mm-hmm. And muscle gaining is so slow that it's not like, hey, looking at yourself weekly is going to show anything. Right. So I would focus for sure a little bit more on the metrics, like the, are you progressing with your programming? And when it comes to that, you know, not just like the number, like the weight and the reps, but also recording yourself and like looking for, I think form PRs are severely underrated, RPE PRs. Like maybe you've done three sets of 10 with this dumbbell a few times, but this is the first time you might have had two reps in the tank, where in the past, like, you had barely been getting there. So, so yeah, I think all data that is not visual in the off season, but definitely scheduling points in time where you actually take some formal progress pictures or progress video is probably the best way to ensure you stay committed to what you're doing. Because if you haven't seen yourself in, or really seen yourself in, say, 2 months, but your lifts are going up, you're going to feel pretty damn good about your bodybuilding, as opposed to like being distracted by the fact that, hey, now you have a few extra belly rolls when I sit down.
For sure, man. All great points. Yeah. So for me, post show, I didn't really look at myself too often. Part of that was just like, it was the individual context for my situation. It was what I needed to do, right? I didn't need to look at myself. I feel like part of that is potentially due to like my younger days, how I really struggled with like being at a heavier body weight, having more body fat. But, you know, I really knew I started to grow and mature when this off season, like not looking at myself in the mirror, it doesn't really bother me. Like, your bodybuilding, your main goal is to be focused on your performance, how you're performing in the gym. Sure, it's cool to get a little flex in here and there between sets in the mirror, but you shouldn't give a fuck about how you look. You should be mainly focused on your progression in the gym, progressing with your lifts, getting stronger, lifting harder. These are the things, these are the fundamentals that are really going to help drive adaptations and, you know, ultimately long-term progress, right? And important things to know, man, all great points. And do you have anything in particular going on your end these past couple or next couple weeks, or that you want to tune the listeners in, or maybe somewhere you're traveling to in regards to seminars?
Oh, man, no seminars that I can speak of yet, because they're still kind of in the works. But we will be visiting a few places, so definitely be on the lookout for that. I'd say if there's anything that it's just going to be a good year. I can't talk about everything yet because it's still kind of like in the works. But we're working hard on releasing more, you know, more things as a company, as 3D Muscle Journey, to you know, keep, you know, teaching the peoples, you know, and help them get off to a better start than we all did as coaches. So so it's going to be the same old song, kind of, slightly different. Yeah. So no, it'll be a very good year. I think this year compared to last year, I plan to be a little bit more, a little bit more open about my off season, and just share, I guess, this might be the last, like, I might compete next year, but just keeping people.
This is next prep is going to be your last prep.
No, it might be this might be my last last offseason year. Yeah, I don't know.
You're going to prep with Jeff, huh?
Maybe. If all feels good enough, you know, because that's how it should be. But yeah, I want to be a little bit more open about my offseason. That's just for me personally a goal, because I'm guilty just like anyone else. Like, I'll post the highlights, but there's days where I go in there and I'm like, it just doesn't make sense, man. I've been eating right. I've gained the weight, and these lifts aren't happening. You know, so yeah, being a little bit more open when it comes to that stuff, and yeah, trying to
me too
sell
you, that
yeah sell people on the facts, because it's not all like, and here's the thing, it's like, yeah, those shitty moments suck, but you know, the good moments wouldn't be as good without the shitty moments. You know,
for sure.
if things were just linear all the time, it wouldn't be very interesting. That'd be a sad life, right?
Man, real ass conversation. Good talks, man. This was an awesome episode. I had a blast talking to you. I'd love to get you on in the future and chat with you. And guys, go follow Birdo on Instagram if you want to see someone, a person who looks like a cadaver in real life. Most shredded person, great human being. And, you know, if you guys have any questions in regards to anything, you know, feel free to shoot him a message. I'm sure he'll be more than happy to help you out, or pull you in the right direction. And thank you again, Berto, for coming on the podcast. I genuinely appreciate it, man.
Well, absolutely. It's been a pleasure being a guest, man. And I'd love to come on some other time.
Cheers. Thank you. We'll talk soon. Peace out, guys. Thank you for watching.